Hello and welcome to Code Bites, sponsored by Search 5.0. I'm your host, Stephen Turkington, and on today's episode, we're privileged to welcome Simon Sear to the podcast. Code Bites, of course, was formed to create an accessible pool of mentors, and still to this day, we come across plenty of aspiring technologists without that go-to person within their career. Simon is a transformation and innovation leader and currently the Chief Digital Officer for Ascent. He's got an absolute exceptional CV. I've just seen him be tech director for companies such as Enron. He's been CIO for BP within their oil and finance trading technology. And on top of that, he's also kickstarted his own design consultancy named Spark along the way. We unpack, I guess, his journey into technology, which wasn't planned. But we look at how a passion and interest in psychology, especially business psychology, has helped elevate him and his career, especially from a people management point of view. We then look at how mentorship has impacted Simon and his career. And we talk about Gen AI, which I know is a big project which Simon is working on currently within Ascent. And he also shares a couple of great examples. Of course, much, much more from this conversation. And I hope you enjoy. Simon, a very warm welcome to Code Bites.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Really excited to have you, Simon. I think you've got a really interesting journey and story to share, which I'm really keen for our listeners to engage with. So without further ado, Simon, I'd love for you to just give us an overview of your career. What got you into the sector and the industry to where you are today?
Yeah, well, I've had a 30-year career. And that's really been in two halves. So the first half, I was in IT management. So I sat inside organizations. And then the second half, I've been a consultant, so tech and data consultant, mostly in the innovation space. But my life actually started as a psychologist. So I studied psychology and then I did a master's degree in business psychology. And that's what I was going to do. I was going to become a business psychologist, helping to transform and change organizations off the back of tech and business change. And things didn't work out that way. And I ended up in IT quite quickly in the 90s. This was mid-90s. I worked at Enron for a number of years. You might know Enron as the biggest bankruptcy, but it was genuinely one of the most innovative companies I've ever worked for. I worked there for a number of years. And then I kind of stayed in the commodities trading space for way more than a decade. Ended up at BP. I was head of IT for all the oil trading systems globally. So in Chicago, London, Singapore, and had hundreds of people working for me and a lot of it outsourced to India and, you know, that kind of first wave of Indian outsourcing stuff. And then, yeah, about 15 years ago, I switched to consulting because it was much more sort of hands-on and innovation and transformation type work. And that's what I've been doing ever since. So I work with customers, a lot of Gen AI stuff at the moment, if I'm honest, but that seems to be most of what I do every day at the moment, but a lot of Gen AI stuff, but also a lot of general tech and data. How do you create new business value from the tools that we've got, you know, across cloud or on-prem, just the whole shebang, really.
Wow. Quite a journey, Simon, and some stellar brands out there too. And it's always interesting, you know, seeing people perhaps coming from a psychology type background, because I kind of probably perceive you, Simon, as somebody who's almost like the link between a commercial team, perhaps, and even a technology team. So how do you feel like being equipped with the understanding of psychology has, I guess, had an impact on your stakeholder management and career?
Yeah. Well, I think psychology in particular, there's all obviously, you know, motivations, driving people, leading people, setting a vision, roadmap, this is where we're going type stuff. So all of those good management practices that you get with psychology. I mean, when I studied psychology, I also studied business and studied minors in economics, you know, macro and micro economics and business stuff. And actually, when I was at school, a lot of schools used to do kind of entrepreneurial. I think it was sponsored by NatWest or something.
Okay.
We set up a little business and we made a little profit and stuff. And we had a bank account. And so I was always into business anyway and kind of commercial drivers. And I think when I fell into IT, that kind of just naturally connected the two. So psychology, actually the three really, isn't it? Psychology, the business and tech, and kind of brought those things together. Because ultimately, it's about how do you drive value for people is at the heart of tech and data transformation.
Yeah, absolutely.
for me personally as well, Simon, kind of going through school, wasn't an overly academic person, but the only thing that drew me in was the business, consumer behavior, you know, those sorts of modules. It's just something which I think naturally gravitized towards. I appreciate that. And I guess if you were to reflect back on your career to date, has there been a, which there's been many, by the way, but has there been a standout moment or a pivotal moment for you?
Yeah, I think that switch from when I was, you know, started out right at the beginning, and I was in my sort of early 20s, and I was on that journey for psychology, and that's what I wanted to do. And I went to work for a small consultancy, which is about 30 people. And so, as I say, it was all about people change as well as the tech and business change. And I was on the bench. So when you're in a consultancy, you kind of have bench time, and then you hope it's not too long, and then you get on a project. But it was dragging on. It was like 2 or 3 months, and it was a small consultancy, I'd say about 30 people. And the owner came in one day and he said, look, do you want to go and work in the program office down at Hermes Asset Management? They're, you know, a sort of big asset management company. And I said, oh, yeah. He said, well, you'll get a bonus. And I was getting married, and I thought, well, I could do with a bonus. I'll say, yes. So I did that. And then I sort of said, well, what is a program office? And he said, oh, you'll get the hang of it when you get there. Don't worry about it. And I did. And that was the doorway to IT. And that's how I got into IT. You know, I was a PMO on a big program. And then I did that, you know, as a consultant for a year or two. And then I went permanent and I went into, say, IT management within the firms. But that for me was a pivotal moment. So that serendipity of just, it was a bit rubbish and I was on the bench, I was getting married, didn't know where I was going to pay for it. And then the universe conspired, if you like, to push me into IT and give me enough money to pay for the wedding. So for me, that was probably one of the accidents of my career, but it's probably one of the biggest ones.
Yeah, and it's great hearing that, the fact that, I guess, starting off your career and anybody's career, but I mean, the route's never straightforward, you know, and you mentioned a couple of times, fell in accidental, you know, and I think that's important for people to kind of realize that you're never kind of pigeonholed, you know, starting, yeah, especially in technology with the landscape now, like there's so many different options up there that just takes for one particular situation to happen, or even a tap on the shoulder from a mentor, perhaps, or somebody who's that kind of guiding light to give you a bit of advice, who's perhaps spotted something.
Yeah.
In your journey.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely, without a doubt. And I think, you know, it was just the Apple founder. He's my Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs. Yeah. It was an early start this morning, but yeah, Steve Jobs talks about, you know, you can join the dots backwards and you can't join them forwards. And when we look back and we look back at someone's career and we say, well, they did this and they did that and then this happened and, oh, well, that's fantastic. But most people don't set out with that roadmap in front of them. You know, something happens. You know, sometimes, I don't know, I've seen people get made redundant and then they go off into another industry and have another whole new career or do a completely new lease of life because they're kind of, you know, in a new environment, a new culture that they would never have experienced before. I think that's what life does. It throws you up those dots and then you just connect them from one to another. And I think as long as you, for me, I've always wanted to be, you know, growing and learning and doing new things and being interested in things. I think if you do that as a person, then, and you get stuff done, that's the other thing. You kind of, you need to be of good critical thinking skills, learning, and get stuff done. I mean, that's, if you've got that, then it doesn't matter what you do. You're valuable to companies.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that connecting the dots backwards analogy as well. I read a recent book, which is around actually high performance, and it was about high performers. They never have a to-do list. It's always a done list, which is probably another angle out too, but I'd love to discuss the power of mentorship with you. What's your relationship with mentorship and how important is one for one's career?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's different for different people. And I think it's different at different stages of your life as well. I mean, there was one person, a guy that I worked with actually back in Enron when I was an IT manager there, and he was the IT director, he was my boss. And he was great. I mean, he was non-technical, but he knew how to deliver value. He knew how to get the best out of people and to connect with people, I think. And he taught me a lot, actually, about that. So, because the technology comes and goes, and, you know, whether it's different flavors of technology, whether it's cloud, whether, I said earlier, Gen AI, for example, doing loads of stuff, you know, in 2 or 3 years' time, it'll be something else. But he taught me, I think, at that time about people, connecting with people, motivating them. And I guess maybe for me, it built on all of that psychology that I was really into anyway. But I'd done probably by that point 4 or 5 years in IT by then. And maybe that's what he did at that point, is he reconnected me to my values and the things that were inside me that I was passionate about. So, yeah, so I think mentors will come and go, but they're there when you need them, I guess, or not all the time is my take on it.
Yeah. And I think that's a key highlight as well, is the fact that it doesn't have to be anybody in the same domain, perhaps, or in the same field. Yeah. And honestly, with the likes of this gentleman, he obviously knew, I guess, intrinsic values, what motivates people. And still to this day, obviously, you know, since 5 years into a career in IT, you've obviously had a lot of success. Would you still have any go-to mentors or people within your network that you would bounce off?
I think in terms of career-wise, I think, to be honest with you, it's more about the friendships that I've kind of come to make over the years. So there are a couple of people who I've known for 20, 25 years. I mean, this makes me sound really old, but that I've worked with, and I don't see them very often, maybe 6 months, not 12 months, but they're the sort of people where you had an experience together and maybe it was delivering, you know, a major trading system and actually you went through a lot together. You know, you had a common goal, a mission, you delivered stuff, you saw the best and the worst of each other in those moments. And then your friendship grew from that. And that's how, what I often find now is that if I go out and have a couple of beers with, you know, there's probably three people I can think of, I have a beer with them. And they're all different people with different walks of life, but we can kind of connect and you can be honest. It's a bit like therapy in a way. There's no pretense. There's no like, oh, well, I'm the boss of these, you know, or the manager of this group of people. I've got to keep up, you know, confidence and motivate them and stuff. You can just be yourself, have a beer, moan about something, have a laugh at yourself. And for me, I think, I'm in my 50s now, that's what my mentorship, these are the people that I grew up with, I guess, that I can have an honest and open conversation with.
Yeah, your personal safe network,
yeah,
Simon.
Yeah,
love that. And I guess that kind of brings us nicely into the world of talent. Obviously, it's not easy to go out and get good people. You've obviously built several teams within your career. I'm keen to understand, how would you identify good talent in today's market?
So I think if you're looking for technical people, then obviously they need to have the technical skills. And as a consultant, for example, you put a project team together to deliver something for a client. And so you want people who are in those teams. So you want your tech lead, for example, to be self-sufficient, maybe full stack, or if they're a platform person, you know, kind of a broad platform knowledge. So you want people like with good deep skills, definitely. But I think also as important are those skills I touched on earlier. So critical thinking. So are they thinking things through? Are they going, the so what, you know, okay, so we've got this problem coming up. Let's think about how we're going to solve it. What's the kind of consequences if we take different routes, et cetera. So I think critical thinking. And then the other thing is also, as I mentioned, is just get stuff done. And there's a great video of Barack Obama that did the rounds, I think, you know, a few months back. And that was, you know, he was asked, what's the one skill that you think you should surround yourself with people that have got? And it was get stuff done, you know, people that make stuff happen. And so for me, it's those. It's the technical competence of whatever you're after, critical thinking, and then get stuff done.
Yeah, love that. Love the simplicity of that, get stuff done. The art of being sort of like doers equally too. And do you know what? Barack Obama, his book is still on my list to tackle. I haven't yet done so. And I guess, regards to retention, what keeps people in jobs? And I imagine, just based on, I guess, your curiosity and, you know, your psychology kind of background and your values, you know, cultures and work environment, I imagine, is so important for you. So how do you keep people within roles and environments, if you like?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, obviously, I agree with you entirely on the kind of culture and ways of working. For me, it's always been about empowerment of people. And if you give people opportunity, you give them authority, you give them space, most people respond very well to that. I think what they don't respond well to is being told what to do, being kept in the dark about what's going on, told off, being continually criticized for stuff. So it's all about culture comes from behaviors, and it's those behaviors. And the best performing teams I've ever been a part of and helped create are teams where everybody's got an opinion or, you know, brings it to the table, and you genuinely have an environment where people feel safe enough to do that and do feel that they've got franchise to make decisions themselves. And it's hard, you know, as a leader, that requires you to sometimes put your own ego to the side. But equally, it requires you to make tough decisions sometimes, because not everyone's going to agree with you on the team. And, you know, it isn't a democracy. Well, if it is a democracy, it's, you know, you're the UN, and, you know, you're actually the boss is the US. They've got the most votes, you know, but you've got to tread that path carefully. But yeah, I think it's culture, but it's culture from behaviors. That's the key for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And that stems to the top down. And typically what we do see is, you know, leaders almost afraid to burn the boats, so to speak, to kind of give that empowerment and give that kind of autonomy. And it's a bit like kind of Daniel Pink reference, you know, autonomy, purpose, mastery, I think it is, isn't it? And that's where you're going to see the good stuff start to flow.
Yeah.
What would you see as the greatest opportunity in the industry currently?
Well, I think, not to kind of jump on the Gen AI bandwagon, but I will. The
Gen AI.
Gen AI, definitely. I mean, Gen AI is transformational. And it's transformational for a number of reasons. One is because of the self-service and automation side of it. So, for example, you know, everything from call centers to assistants for, you know, doctors, nurses, lawyers, accountants. So there's a lot of automation to help people, you know, solutions that are in the loop with people. So I think there's a lot of productivity and efficiency gains to be had, and businesses are going to go after that because we've had, you know, 15 years of, you know, low growth, low productivity improvements. So I think that's why there's a lot of hype about it, and a lot of the boardrooms and exec meetings that I'm having, it's all about what the driving that productivity and efficiency through the organization. So I think that's one of the reasons. And then I think the other part of it is how it's kind of bootstrapping a lot of cloud services within organizations as well. So from an IT perspective, and whether you're, you know, Azure or GCP or AWS, you know, obviously we've been on a cloud journey for, you know, way more than a decade. But now I think with a lot of the services, you look at the speed that the vendors are releasing tools, it's just phenomenal. I've never seen anything like it so fast. So I think for me, if I were a technologist now, I would want to be in that space, because there's huge business transformation and rapid technology innovation. And then sandwiched right in the middle is data, because you can't do either without the data. And so it really is a sweet spot of pulling all of those components together.
Absolutely. And in your role, do you see much resistance to change from stakeholders or clients? And if you do, how would you tackle that?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, there's a fear, right? There's a natural fear, you know, is this going to take my job? What's it going to mean for me as an individual? And I do think, and not to get too deep, but I think there will be a period where we think about what it means to be human. So what does it mean that, what differentiates us rather than the machines? Because machines are brilliant at automating stuff. So if you can automate stuff, so take, for example, a simple use case in Gen AI is a doctor talking to a patient. So today what happens is a doctor talks to a patient and they have to write up notes, or they, you know, type it into a computer. But now there's, you know, solutions out there where it listens to the consultation, it writes up the notes automatically for you. The doctor goes through it, goes, yeah, that's correct. And then it gets pushed into the electronic health record immediately. And so it's lowering the risk of missing information. It's automating it, it's speeding it up, it's making doctors 20-30% more efficient, they can see more patients during the day, et cetera. So that will help that whole journey. That's where machines are good at doing that sort of stuff. But as we automate more and more mundane stuff, then we'll go, well, what does it mean to be human? What makes us? And then it's about compassion, creativity, empathy. And we can model some of those things in computers, but really, that's the thing that differentiates us as human, are those kind of emotional qualities. So I think we'll have a period of time where we go, what does it mean to be human? Therefore, what do we do with social services? What do we do with healthcare? We've got all these great tools, but actually let's transform the way that we think about those aspects of our lives. So I think that will happen. I've forgotten what your original question was.
Yeah, that's it. You've hit the nail on the head there, Simon, just in regards to like resistance to change and what that would look like. But, you know, you're right.
So your question, the resistance to change. So I think a lot of things like that doctor example.
Yeah, that's a great example.
There won't be resistance to change because it's like, well, this is helping me do my job. Whereas I think, you know, that there are some things where there's resistance to change where, you know, we get rid of call centers, for example, or large swathes of people in those jobs. So we might see some resistance there. But I think as long as we're growing the economy and we're replacing jobs with new jobs, maybe it's in social care or health or, you know, all those other aspects that are going to grow, then we're okay. We won't get kind of civil unrest or disruption. Because I think inevitably, as I said earlier, from a board level, it's going to drive productivity and efficiency. And, you know, businesses at the end of the day are there to make money for their shareholders. They will drive those changes through.
Absolutely. And I think on that as well, I think the new job creation on the back of this here and already the new roles we'll start seeing, especially in tech over the last kind of couple of years, is pretty exciting about what that could look like in the next 4 to 6 years. Doesn't necessarily mean a job that is going to be made redundant. It just means the potential for actually upskilling and reskilling at the same time.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the key jobs is an AI engineer. You know, if you can do prompt engineering, which is kind of a combination of a bit of software engineering with sort of data science approaches and understanding data. I mean, we happen to, I work at Ascent, we're a technology transformation firm, and we happen to train people in that role because it's a brand new thing. GPT and Gen AI has only really been around a year and a half. So already we're seeing a lot of tech roles like that emerging.
And is that, out of curiosity, Simon, is that people who are coming from a data engineering role or a software engineering role who are really curious about stepping into this space? Or how do you kind of go about identifying, you know, those people?
Yeah, so definitely for data scientists, it's definitely a natural step for them. But we're seeing a lot of engineers as well moving into that sort of prompt engineering space. Because if the solutions aren't just about data, aren't just about prompt engineering, but you're pulling in data, you're integrating your Gen AI solution into an existing or a new application because it's part of a service or it's part of a workflow of a doctor or a nurse. So you kind of do need a broad set of skills. It's not just about the data. You need to think about some of the other engineering aspects as well.
Yeah, hugely exciting.
Yeah.
So listen, as we close off, what advice would you have to any aspiring technologist in today's world?
I think it would be those things, you know, critical thinking, be curious, continue to learn. And there's some of the best people I know, that sort of growth mindset where, you know, they're continually learning online, they're trying to solve problems. And technology today and all the tools and videos we've got and bite-sized stuff, and just continue to play in that space. And then, yeah, as I said earlier, just be helpful, just get stuff done. You know, that's ultimately how you'll show up as adding value to you know, whether it's a project manager or a department manager or a client, or ultimately, as I said earlier, people that make stuff happen are the people that we want to keep around.
100%. And we always close off our Code Bytes episode with a book review. Simon, I'm sure you've had a plenty that you kind of read and researched, but I'm keen to learn what book or audio has had a profound impact on your career and why.
So I think one of them is definitely Peter Thiel's book, Zero to One. So he did a series of talks, I think he was at Stanford, and he did a series of talks. If you don't know, Peter Thiel was an entrepreneur. He was one of the original PayPal guys with Elon Musk. Then he was an early investor in Facebook, and I mean, he's a billionaire investor in a bunch of stuff. But so he gave a series of lectures, and in these lectures, he ended up writing in this book called Zero to One. And fundamentally, the premise is we can implement incremental change, but if you really want to make a difference, you've got to go from zero to one. You've got to change the game. So PayPal changed the game, Facebook changed the game, Google changed the game. And that's his point, is it's about step change. And I think for me, the conversation we're having earlier about Gen AI is step change. And I run a lot of design thinking kind of workshops with clients and stuff. And a lot of that is like step change. Let's think differently. Let's not just think about maybe automating some of our processes, but let's think about the whole customer experience, the employee experience. How are we going to get better at healthcare and not just automating that single thread of the notes from the meeting, but then what do we do with it afterwards? What does that care look like and how does it wrap around that individual? So I think that for me is the was a really good book. And I often kind of check myself and go, what's the 0 to 1?
I love that sentence, right? Just to have that bigger holistic picture. And then that kind of stat checks to get there. Must actually check that out. Simon, this has been a superb conversation, as I knew it would be. If people were curious, want to find a bit more about yourself or the great work with Ascend, where could they go about doing this?
Yeah, LinkedIn is probably the easiest route. You know, find me on LinkedIn. I've got videos and things on YouTube that it's kind of, they were a bit of a hobby in kind of lockdowns and COVID time. Some of them might be a bit dated now, but yeah, you can check some of those things out. I talk about things like, will Gen AI take my job and 5 steps of innovation? And there's some stuff like that on my YouTube channel. But yeah, other than that, just connect with me on LinkedIn. And, you know, if people want, you know, some advice or some insight about jobs and roles and things, I'm more than happy to help if I can with people. I'm quite busy, but I do respond eventually.
Oh, brilliant, Simon. Yeah, it's good to hear that you weren't part of the 90% of the population who turned to baking wheat and bread in lockdown, and you actually put some good content out there equally too on YouTube.
My wife is actually a baker, so she's a TV baker. So
she was the one
baking, and I was I was videoing her content during lockdown. So yeah, I had enough of that. I wasn't going to do my own as well.
Wow, love that, Simon. Love that. Simon, this has been such a great conversation. Thank you so much for coming on board.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.